Welcome to Spoiler Piece Theater, the podcast that doesn't give a shit about spoilers. We just want to talk about the movies. My name is Dave Riedel. I write about movies at the Chicago Reader. I yap about movies here. My pronouns are he, him, and I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association.
My name is Evan Crean. I'm co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and co-author of Your 80s Movie Guide to Better Living, and my pronouns are he, him.
And my name is Megan Kearns. My pronouns are she, her. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network. I, too, am a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, and I'm a member of Gallica, the Society of LGBTQ Entertainment Critics.
Yes. It's you know, trying to find a different way to say yes, you are each week. I've run out, so I'm gonna maybe I'll try no, you aren't next week.
See, I hear every time I hear Gallica, I think of it's like a branch of Starfleet for some reason. I don't know why.
I always think of the video game.
I mean,
Gallica.
Interesting. Yeah. I was gonna say I'm not mad at the Starfleet Association because I am a Trekkie, so there we go.
Oh wait, age old debate before we get into the episode: Trekkie or Trekker? It's very important.
Trekkie.
I don't know which side is the like the more approved. In
I've never
quotes.
Heard of Trekker. That's so interesting.
I remember reading. I read lots of Star Trek books when I was a kid, and some of the you know trivia books would be like, don't call certain Trekkers Trekkies or Trekkies Trekkers.
Ooh. Yeah,
or you might get a pointy ear in the forehead. And it's like, all right.
No, that's so fascinating. I've never heard that.
Yeah. Well, hey, you learned something new today on Spoiler Piece. Yes.
I did. Yes.
We're all enriched for it.
Yes. We are an educational program here.
Yeah, that's right. Before we get into the main episode here, I wanted to thank our sponsor piece patron, Heather Sachs. Thank you very much, Heather, for being a sponsor piece patron. We really appreciate it. And speaking of Patreon and patronage, I'm looking at next week's notes and I almost said the name of next week's movie. This week, we're talking about Enter the Dragon, the 1973 Bruce Lee starring martial arts epic. Well, it's not really epic. It's epic-ish. But anyway, I had only seen one Bruce Lee movie before. I think Megan had seen none. I don't know how many you've seen, Evan, but...
Zero. This is my first.
Okay, yeah. So a lot of first-timers here and one second-timer. So... take that for what it's worth. But we had a fun and lively discussion over on the Patreon. And if you're a $5 patron or higher, you have access to that and about 300 other bonus episodes. And if you're not a patron, please consider becoming one. But thank you, patrons. We can't do those bonus episodes without you. First movie tonight. Well, there's two movies. I'll tell you what they are. First, there's Aaron's Guide to Kissing Girls, which as far as like movie titles go, good title. And then the second movie is Shotgun Wedding. But we'll be talking about, which one are we doing first? We're doing Aaron's Guide to Kissing Girls first. I'm sorry. Yes. I've got next week's notes in front of me and I've got this week's notes on my screen saying I should just move next week's notes over here where I can't see them. And now we don't have to worry about it anymore. So let's talk about Aaron's Guide to Kissing Girls. I'm going to read this plot summary, which is, this is just a guess, but it's an educated guess. The longest plot summary we've read on Spoiler Piece Theater.
Whoa.
Here you go.
No, can't be.
Oh, just wait. As middle school is ending, Erin, the only out person in her grade, and Liz, fellow comic nerd and track star, it makes it sound like Erin is a track star. Anyway, find their friendship tested when Liz is accepted to a private school and Erin falls hard for new girl and ex-child star, Sydney. Erin believes the only way to save herself from certain doom is to ask Sydney to the big dance, but the plan goes awry when she starts to lose Liz along the way. Well, now we don't need to talk about the movie. Because that's the whole goddamn thing.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very, I would say, accurate and very specific breakdown. Of course, it is deeper than that because it is, a 90-minute movie. But them's the basics. So what did everybody think? Who wants to start? Oh, Megan's leaning in.
I thought this was delightful. I found it very charming. Yeah. Yay. Yeah. You guys know I'm always here. Obviously, I think we all are for a queer film, especially a queer. This isn't really a rom-com, but I know, as I've said previously, I think of rom-coms as not necessarily like hard comedy, I think of like kind of like this fluffy, cozy feel to them. And this definitely has that. And we need more queer films. And something that Juliana Naughton, the filmmaker, said in their director statement that I thought was really accurate and interesting was that she was inspired to make this film, and this is based on her short film, and she was inspired because most of the queer films she had seen, especially growing up, were about coming out stories or they were tragedies. And I kind of love that Erin's like already out. She's 13. She's already out. It's not a part of the story. And I really love that we just get to see her have this crush and we get to see her lovely friendship and we see their, you know, trials and tribulations about what does it mean when there's change coming because Erin, you know, has this crush. And what is her best friend's name again? All I can think of is the actor's name. Thank you. All I can think of was Jessica, the actor's name. Yeah. And Liz is, you know, going away to a different school on a track scholarship. And so Erin is worried that they're not even going to be friends anymore. And, you know, when you're a kid, these kinds of things are the end of the world. You know, everything is rightfully so, so dramatic. And so I really liked what was happening. I love that they're comic nerds. I love that they hang out at the comic book store. As someone who also hung out at comic book stores, I love that. And I love that the comic was created as like a way to promote the movie. Like, I think that that's adorable and really sweet and cute. And I just really liked this. I thought this was just very charming and very lovely. The one thing I will say that kind of surprised me, and this isn't a negative, but it just did surprise me, and I don't know if this is a Canadian thing or just I expected things to be different because I'm so much older than these kids. But a lot of the things that happened in class, I was like, yeah, that kind of was like in my class too. Like, I guess I thought the structure of classes would be radically different since so many decades have passed. But anyway, so it kind of felt like not as current, but again, that's not a knock on the film. It was just like, oh, I can actually relate to this a little more than I thought I would be able to. But anyway, a very sweet film.
Yeah, maybe things haven't changed that much as far as like teaching curricula goes, you know?
Right?
I don't know if that's good or bad.
I was thinking that. I was like, oh, I don't know if that's good.
Yeah. Well, Evan, how about you? Where do you come down?
I liked this movie. I didn't love it. And I'm still trying to work out exactly what it was that wasn't quite working for me, but I think it is really cute. It's a cute film. I like that, you know, it's... Sorry. Just give me a moment. I like a lot of things that you mentioned, Megan. Like, I like that they hang out at the comic book store. I like the relationship that they have with the guy who works there. They kind of have like a cute Gen Z versus millennial rivalry when they like talk smack to each other. I definitely related to this despite not having been in middle school in a very long time, but I found elements of it very relatable, like when they go to the girl's birthday party and they're sitting around like playing truth or dare, or like the, you know, like you were saying, Megan, this feeling when you're that age where going to a different school feels like kind of the end of the world and you feel like you're growing apart from your friends. And I feel like that was something I kind of went through because I went to a different high school than most of my friends. And so there was definitely that like worry about growing apart. And I mean, it did happen to a degree, so I can't say it was like an unfounded worry, but you know, it feels like a real emotional stake here. And I think that was what I was really gravitating towards in this movie is this, you know, friendship that's struggling because of change and growing and new opportunities and new places. That to me felt really relatable. So I mean I like this, and I'm still trying to like put my finger on like what quite wasn't working for me. I don't know, maybe I felt like it was kind of slow or it wasn't quite as punchy as I hoped in terms of the writing or the conflicts between the characters, but I did like the actors' performances. I liked Erin quite a bit. One of my favorite scenes is when she's trying to teach herself how to flirt. She's wearing different outfits and saying goofy pickup lines in front of the mirror. You know, I love a good pun, so I laughed my ass off when she was wearing the farmer's outfit and said, "I think you're a maze."
Yeah. I like, what is this jacket made of? Girlfriend material. That one cracked me up. Because that's kind of a stretch, because who says material? I mean, I guess you would say, what is that material? But would you offer up that it's girlfriend material? I don't know. I come down somewhere between the two of you. I think I liked it more than Evan did, but not as much as you did, Megan. I actually thought that Aaron, I wouldn't say the weak link. I thought Elliot Stocking is the performer's name. I thought that performance was kind of sometimes it was just uneven, you know.
Yes.
Sometimes really, really good, and sometimes you can see this kid making acting choices, you know, which happens to young performers. Mm-hmm. I think that Liz was great.
Oh my God, yes.
I loved Liz. And I thought Sydney was really good too, just kind of the perfect mm-hmm. sort of, I'm so over this, you know, and kind of the wariness of being the new kid. One of the things that I did like though, although it becomes clear, so Aaron's got this crush on Sydney, and when she hears that Sydney has two moms, she's like, oh my God, she just assumes that Sydney is also a lesbian and asks her to the dance and does it in this very dramatic way, which is one of her, you know, ways to kiss girls. And Sydney says yes in front of everybody. And I was like, and we all know, I'm assuming you two both knew that Sydney is
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was kind of just sort of relieved that Sydney was conscious enough / kind enough to just say yes in the moment so that Aaron wasn't completely humiliated. Cause I feel like if that happened, when I was 13, it would have been a whole different horrible story. Even if like the, you know, it was straight nerdy kid asking out, you know, the popular girl, like whatever, you know, the 1987 equivalent would be, you know, I feel like it would go badly. But Sydney was cool. She was like, yeah, I'll go with you. And then like later, that is awkward though, when Aaron tries to kiss her and Sydney's like, oh, wait a minute.
But what I do love is Sydney's reaction later, and she's like, I'm just figuring things out. And I love that. She's not like shutting it down like, oh no, I'm straight. But she's also like, ooh, but I'm not sure. And I just, I think that was a really great choice.
Right. Yeah. And she explains, you know, you asked me in front of everybody and I was on this, you know, I felt on the spot and I didn't want to say no and like hurt your feelings or be shitty.
Yeah.
And I do like that they reach a place of friendship, and then at the dance, they do end up going to the dance, and then, you know, Liz goes and then all three of them are together and dancing. I like that it becomes a thing that's like about, you know, all three of them.
And that it's clear that Liz and Aaron are still best friends and, you know, and whatever else as it, cause they're talking about the ending of the fanfic that Aaron is writing, which I just like that plot thread that they've got this fanfic that Aaron is writing about this comic that they love that also seems very close to the comic itself.
Yes. So
it's like the storyline.
Right. But clearly they are the, you know, the characters are their avatars. You know,
right.
Yes.
So, yeah, I would have liked them to explore a little bit more of Liz and her experience with the other kids she met at the track sports school. There's really only one scene of that where Liz meets, she's like, how, why do I know you? And they're like, oh, we were at the track meet last year and this other kid broke like a record. And then they love the same comic and they start talking about that. And then you see a text exchange from them later. And it's like, oh, well, this is kind of a nice little avenue we're going down. You don't usually get to see like the second leads, you know, whatever. And then that's kind of where it ends. It's like, oh, all right. It is only 90 minutes long, but.
I think it is. I think you raise a really great point, Dave, though, because especially tying it into what Liz said to Aaron about how she's like, I'm not your sidekick, which is how she felt. Yeah. And it's like, she's not the sidekick, but yet the film relegates her to the role of sidekick in a way.
It does.
So I agree. So for both reasons, one, because I found Liz to be the most fascinating character and the best actor in the film, and for the fact that she's not a sidekick, it would have been nice to have fleshed her out a bit more and seen her life more at the new school.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know why I really loved the soundtrack for this.
I thought the
music choices in this were fucking great. And I went and put a bunch of them on my YouTube music page when the movie was over. Yeah.
I love
it's an unlisted playlist though, so if you want it, I'll have to send it to you. But yeah, just good contemporary, you know, a lot of like EDM and not shoegazy kind of stuff, but shoegaze-esque stuff. I don't know. It's good. I also love the fact that this is a short movie. I'm glad that we're back to short movies. Or at least one short movie this week.
Mm-hmm.
It's another thing that I would say about this is that its structure is very, it's a very traditional sort of teen, let's say quasi-romance structure. I mean, I didn't feel like didn't feel like there were any big surprises that came my way as far as how things would turn out or the trials and tribulations that Erin would mm-hmm. experience during her quest to make Sydney her girlfriend. The one thing that did surprise me was the mean girls were mean, but I'm surprised they weren't meaner. I was actually kind of like, you know, if this is as bad as they are, these kids are actually, I hate to say this, kind of lucky.
Basically, they're Canadian mean.
That's right. Canadian mean is like American sort of, you know, kind of dickish, indifferent, you know?
Yeah, really, the boys are terrible.
The boys are, yeah, you're right. The boys are terrible.
They're super homophobic. Mm-hmm. They're gross. They're sexist. They're awful. But yeah, but the quote-unquote mean girls, yeah, actually, they're nice, except for the kind of ringleader one. And even she's not that, you're right, she's not that bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the reason, you know, she thinks that Sydney is some, like, I don't know, she wants to glom on to Sydney because Sydney used to be a child star. And she's like, oh, I'm just considering getting into acting myself. And Sydney's like, I was a child. She actually says, I was a child. You know, so it's, you know, it's shitty to glom on to someone because, you know, you want to rub off on their fame if Sydney even had any at that point. But yeah, otherwise, it's not like, I don't know the names of any of the characters in Mean Girls, but it's not, oh, Regina. It's just not like Regina, who's mm-hmm. like truly mean.
So. But it is really interesting that the head, quote unquote, mean girl is really invested in Sydney and Aaron's presumed relationship and that's even true, dresses huh? like in a pink suit, like kind of like a quasi butch meets femme outfit. Like,
and wears a tie. She's wearing a tie.
Yep.
That she takes off when Sydney and Aaron say, oh, we're just friends.
Yep.
She's like, ugh.
I know. It's like really, I'm like, huh, that's an interesting reaction to be like so invested and to think that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It was funny because after the party where Sydney and Erin end up in the closet and then they, you know, there's 7 minutes. I'm going to call it 7 minutes in heaven. There's 7 minutes in the closet talking. They come out. Everyone else is kind of thinking, oh, okay, well maybe they like made out or kissed in there. And then there's the scene at the school where Erin and Sydney are just, I don't know, they're sitting there like polishing trophies or something in the hallway. And then the girls detention. Show up and they're all wearing like rainbow outfits because they think they're mm-hmm. going to be supportive of Sydney. Like, oh, maybe if she thinks we're cool, we're down with the queers and like maybe we'll be cool by association.
Right.
Yeah. So things haven't changed that much in the sense that kids are trying to impress the other kids that they think are cooler than they are. But like you said, Evan, it's the Canadian version, so they're nicer about it.
That's true. But I will say the thing that, and I should have led with this, I don't know why I didn't think about it until literally just now. When I was in middle school, no one was out. When I was in high school, no one was out. And mm-hmm. I lived in a pretty conservative area, even though it was in New England. And yeah, and it's interesting because so many people that I knew came out as queer, including myself, came out, you know, as queer much later after high school. But I think it's really refreshing to see somebody who's queer and 13 and to have, you have the two guys who are assholes, but to see that many of the classmates, while she is ostracized for certain things, it seems like it's not always because of her queerness, which is
right.
kind of refreshing.
Yeah, it's more like because she's a comic book nerd.
It does seem that way. Yeah, they're like, oh, she's just a weirdo who reads a lot of comics and doodles a lot. So that's why we're mostly gonna push her to the side.
Right.
It was interesting, though, at the party that they do crash against Liz's better judgment. How there are two girls, though, that are interested to hear about Liz's, like, track scholarship. And I was like, oh, wow, Erin's even more ostracized than I thought she was, because Liz, even though she's not, quote, cool, unquote, these two kids are genuinely interested in, like, what her, like, what's coming up for her. And I was like, oh, that's poor Erin.
You know, so. You're right. Yeah. And actually, that comes right after they ask Erin to show her leg, because they're talking about hair removal, and Erin has a hairy leg. And she's like, oh, I, you know, just didn't get a chance to shave. And I was like, oh, she's feeling like shame about her body hair because, you know, they're focusing on it. But anyway, poor Erin.
Yeah. Well, does anybody have any closing thoughts to Erin's Guide to Kissing Girls?
I liked the ending a lot. I thought it was very, the whole film is sweet, but the ending, there's something about it. I think it was the music choice. I think it's the fact that Liz and Erin are dancing. I think it's the fact that they have this kind of fantasy moment where they are wearing their comic avatar costumes. And I just found it very, very moving. And I liked that a lot.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that Liz asked, you know, do you think that in the comic, I can't remember what the comic characters are called.
Luna Star and Scarlet Sparrow?
Yeah, Lunar Girl and Scarlet Sparrow.
Lunar Girl.
Do you think Luna Girl and Scarlet Sparrow would ever end up together or something like that? And Erin says, it's something that I've considered, or whatever she says. And I was like, oh, wow. I didn't. It was a twist for me.
Oh, yeah. Really? I got that immediately that Liz was into Erin.
Oh, yeah, see.
The entire time I got that Liz was jealous, not just because of friendship, but because she was into Erin.
Oh, see, now I didn't get that, so. Wow. Hey, something I couldn't predict. There you go.
Yeah. I definitely saw the clues along the way that it was, like you said, Megan, it was more than just a simple friendship jealousy. There were a lot of like looks that she gave Erin to me that indicated that this is more than just, I'm upset that my friend is ditching me. But I did love the ending too. I thought that was like a really sweet moment. And I like that there's kind of like an ambiguity to it where, you know, she asks that question of Erin. Do you think, you know, yeah, maybe they do. And maybe they do stay friends, or maybe at some point they become more than friends. And I like that the movie's content to kind of just let us consider that. And I think now that we've had a chance to talk about it, I think some of the stuff to me that wasn't working were some of the things that you talked about, like Elliot Stocking's kind of inconsistent performance, feeling like there's a little bit of underdevelopment on the on Liz's front in terms of what was going on with her and some of that relationship. And I feel like it was a little bit, it was sad to me that we don't learn anything about Erin's family situation. It seems like
that's true.
It was a weird choice.
Weirdly by herself. And I'm like, we literally never saw a parent even in passing. And I'm like, is she ostracized at home too? Like, I wasn't sure if that was what the message the movie was trying to send or like not. So that to me was kind of a head scratcher. And like, I feel like I wanted more from it.
Yeah. That's true. I definitely noticed that we never saw Erin's parents. We even see Liz's mom. I think the movie opens with like them at Liz's house, and Liz's mom is like, all right, we got to go, you know? Mm-hmm. And of course we see Sydney's two moms because that's actually a plot point. But
and we also see the Mean Girls mom, who's like a YouTuber or something.
Oh, right. She's like a YouTube. That's right.
Like a beauty, aspiring beauty guru.
Yeah. That is an interesting choice. I would be surprised if it's because she's ostracized at home. Just, you know, I feel like that would come up in the story.
Yeah, you would think. And, you know, I think it would be challenging for the character possibly to be open and out at school if she didn't have some type of support system at home to lean on, but we never get a chance to see that, which I think was kind of like bothering me a bit.
Maybe we're just supposed to assume that everything at home is fine and that's why we don't see him.
Yeah, it is kind of interesting because the film talks about, or one of the characters talks about Love, Simon. And so then Love, Simon, because there's also not many movies about, you know, out queer kids. And I was thinking about that. And then in Love, Simon, his family is so supportive when he comes out. And so I was kind of it was interesting. I was thinking, I was like, are we supposed to think that like, oh, her family is just very supportive of her? But it is, it's interesting that you guys are mentioning this, because I definitely, it was a glaring omission too, that we didn't even get like one scene, or we didn't even have her say like, oh, my mom is making cookies for me, or I don't know, like that's right. Very
or
cliche.
One of our parents hearing what? Her upset in the room, like tearing things off the wall, like, yeah. Oh, what's wrong, sweetie? Are you fighting with Liz or something? You know what I mean?
Right.
We've identified problems. Okay.
So, but I love that we're thinking so deeply about this movie. I like that.
Well, it's a thinker. I mean, it's a little deeper than your average, you know, I mean, actually, I don't know how many eighth grade, you know, romance movies I've seen. So I think maybe this in eighth grade, I don't even think that counts as a romance movie. So
no, but that's a great movie.
Yeah, it's fun. So, okay. So any final thoughts on Aaron's Guide to Kissing Girls?
No.
Okay. All righty then. So let's move on to our second movie this week. We watched Prime's number one movie, Shotgun Wedding, starring Jennifer Lopez and Josh Duhamel and Lenny Kravitz and Cheech Marin and Sonia Braga and Jennifer Coolidge and
Darcy Carden.
Right. I forgot. Pretty stacked cast in this one. So let me read you the description here, which is shorter than Aaron's description. IMDb description. Darcy and Tom gather their families for the ultimate destination wedding, but when the entire wedding party is taken hostage, the bride and groom must save their loved ones if they don't kill each other first. I don't really think that they were ever close to killing each other, even in the sort of, you know, like, oh, I hate you kind of sense.
No.
It's a little dramatic.
Maybe accidentally due to their own ineptness.
Yeah. I did like the moment when J-Lo accidentally fired the shotgun in her sister's direction and she got a little buckshot in the ear. She's like, did you just shoot me? Like, I didn't, didn't mean to. Yeah. Should know not to put your finger on a trigger ever unless you're about to shoot. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the plot. You know, they've got this destination wedding that Tom is, you know, he's the big planner for this whole thing. And Darcy is kind of like, eh. And, you know, her parents are divorced and they hate each other. And Josh Duhamel's parents are still together and they love each other. But you find out there was some kinky sex stuff in there. I don't know. I think the beginning of this movie, when these quote pirates unquote show up and take everybody hostage, I thought there was a lot of funny stuff in that. And then once we kind of got into, after Jennifer Lopez dropped the grenade on the two guys and blew them up, that's kind of where it started, became very routine for me after that and very predictable. And, you know, I think I sent a text to the two of you at the beginning. I was like, I'm having a lot of fun with this. And then it sort of just petered out. Pretty quickly.
Whoops.
Too. You know? So, no big surprises, you know, as it turns out, you know, Lenny Kravitz, who works for Jennifer Lopez's dad, who is Cheech Marin, is, you know, hired these guys to to take everybody hostage so that he can get, is it $15 million, $40 million? It's a lot. It's a significant chunk of dough. Get it wired into
$40
his
million,
account.
I believe.
$40 million. Yeah, that's right. He's got a net worth of 65 and Lenny Kravitz wants $40 million. Of course, it is not revealed until about halfway through that Lenny Kravitz is indeed the ringleader, although you can kind of see it coming.
You can see it coming a mile away.
Yeah, you can see it coming. And then the way they figure out that it's him is also kind of like, I mean, yes, I guess all of those things could happen, but boy, isn't it lucky that you found all those things the way you did. And the whole conflict that Tom and Darcy have about, you know, the wedding preparations and how it's indicative of like larger problems in their relationship. It didn't.
Oh my God.
It
doesn't work
at all.
Yeah. It doesn't work.
It was
stupid. Yeah. Well, also because they kind of change in the middle of the movie what the problem is. So at first they kind of off on their own. That's why they don't get, you know, held. They're not taken hostage because they're off on their own fighting before the wedding. And that argument is about like, oh, well, Tom, you wanted a wedding. I didn't want a big wedding. I just wanted to elope. And that's really their kind of sticking point is that he felt like he had to have a wedding, and because he had to have the wedding, you know, a lot of it is stuff that ended up being more stuff that his mom, Jennifer Coolidge, wanted than anything. Like, J-Lo has to wear his mom's wedding dress from the 80s, which is like some wedding dress that they passed down to other people in the family. And so they have that argument and they get like pissed off at each other. But later when they get into another argument, he accuses her of being like a scared little girl who is afraid of the commitment of marriage. Yeah. And that's the plot line that they stick to later when she's like, oh, you're right, I was scared. And it was because I was worried about going all in on us and blah. And it just doesn't work. First of all, because they just changed their mind in the middle of the movie. But second of all, it just doesn't work.
That's gross.
For those first 30 minutes, not bad.
Glad yeah. you enjoyed it.
I will also say, by the way, really quickly, that Lenny Kravitz's death by a helicopter blade was surprisingly graphic.
Oh, yeah. Very yeah. gruesome.
The kills in this are really gruesome. It's shockingly violent. Like, she, you know, you were talking before about she drops a hand grenade on these two guys. They're originally, you know, tied up in the back of this golf cart, and she sets one of the guys' heads on fire, mm-hmm. and you see later he's got these horrible, horrible third-degree burns all over his face. Yeah. The helicopter death.
And there's the one that I think Josh Duhamel beats to death in the kitchen.
Yep, there's mm-hmm. that death. All in all, they kill something in the neighborhood of 7 or 8 people, which is kind of crazy to me for a movie that kind of markets itself as a light comedy.
Yeah.
And they do a lot of murder in
this is a hard R, this movie. Yeah. Like... I remember when at the beginning of every streaming movie, it comes up rated R for rated PG-13 for, and I was like, violence, language, brief nudity. I was like, what the fuck? I had no idea that I was getting a hard R action comedy disguised as a rom-com, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah. Oh, well.
I wanted to like this more. I think my major problems really boil down to the fact that I think Josh Duhamel has negative chemistry with Jennifer Lopez. And a lot of
him generally. I don't really think he's much of a screen presence.
Yes, I'd agree with that. I think normally he's fine in things. And when I say fine, I literally mean fine. Like, he's okay. He's not bad. He's not horrible. He's not great. But in this, the fact that he has just absolutely no chemistry with Jennifer Lopez, you can't hang a comedy or a rom-com on a thing where you just don't have chemistry between the leads. Like, you just can't do it.
Yeah. Well, people do it all the time though. Sorry.
Well, but they shouldn't. I agree, Evan, everything you're saying. They have zero chemistry. And how can you not have chemistry with J-Lo? She's amazing.
Seriously.
And she's fantastic in this, and she's great in everything. I love her. But even she can't save this. But I think the interesting thing, and I said this to you guys last week when we were talking about watching this, I love Josh Duhamel on All My Children, and he was Leo Dupree on All My Children, and he was, but not now. Oh, Josh right. Duhamel. I love Josh Duhamel when he was still doing soap operas, like when he was so charismatic. Like, he was like a different person. He had so much charisma, so much spunk. He was great. And like, he had, there was like a leading woman and they were kind of on again, off again, and they had lots of chemistry. And I remember watching him on that and being like, oh man, he would be great in movies. Nope. Like, boy, was I wrong. Like, I've never seen someone who was so good just tank so badly. And I don't know, like, I don't know what is happening with him, because I know he can be better. So. But I think this movie is atrociously written. The script is fucking ghastly. I hated the script.
Ghastly.
It is appallingly bad. This movie made me mad. I was like, this is just awful, because how do you fuck up a movie that has Jennifer Lopez, who is so ridiculously talented in every possible mm-hmm. way? How do you fuck that up? And Jennifer Coolidge. Jennifer Coolidge is amazing. She's hilarious. She's charismatic. Mm-hmm. She's so great. And like, Sonia Braga is amazing. And I can't think of the actor's name, but the guy who's the best man, he was fantastic on You're the Worst. I love him. How do you do this cast so dirty? How do you do that?
Writing a bad movie.
Yeah. I also think it was interesting choices to have the actors playing the siblings, because that's his, first of all, that's supposed to be Josh Duhamel's brother, which they could not look less alike, but he's also in real life.
Wait, that's his brother?
I thought he was just his best man.
I thought he was just his best friend and best man. Yeah.
You sure?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't have a lot of, best friends who are 18 years younger than I am. I'm just going to throw that out there. And also J-Lo's sister is like 20 years younger than she is in real life. It's kind of like the rom-com problem when you have the older man and the younger woman, but it's, in this case, it's mom and dad had kids 20 years apart, which happens. I'm not saying it doesn't happen.
I know it is weird though, but yeah,
it is weird.
At least J-Lo's parents are age appropriate. I will say that.
Yes. Yes. But if you're going to go to the trouble to cast Sonia Braga, give her something to do other than be angry at Cheech Marin.
Right?
You know?
Right. But speaking of age differences and age problems, I'm sorry, Jennifer Coolidge is not old enough to have birthed Josh Duhamel. She is only 11 years older than him. That's absurd.
Oh,
that's like a Hitchcock problem. He used to do that.
Yeah.
I think in North by Northwest, you know, the mother is like 3 years older than Cary Grant in real life. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, something like that.
Well, I was just going to say, speaking of Jennifer Coolidge, I did think she was funny in this and I did laugh at her lines, but I think that was Jennifer Coolidge just shining through on bad material.
Yes.
She was just very funny with that ongoing joke where she's like, I'm a mother. I can worry about more than one thing at a time. I thought that was fucking hilarious.
Yeah, that was funny.
I agree with that.
I love when she's like, I saw on Dateline that we need to humanize ourselves. So she starts introducing herself to the pirates. And then later when she picks up that gun and she clearly knows what to do with it.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, I love this. I love that Jennifer, I've always loved her. And I love that she's having a moment right now, because literally in the span of watching this, I also watched both seasons of
White Lotus,
and I also watched The Watcher, which she's in. So it was like, nice. I was watching like everything Jennifer Coolidge from the past like year. I want more.
I saw the episode of Seinfeld that she's in where she's dating Jerry and she hates George.
Yep, I've seen that episode too.
Yeah. It's like, why do I recognize this woman's voice? I'm like, oh my God, it's like Jennifer Coolidge 30 years ago.
Her voice is so different, which is really interesting.
But she's still got that, like, the lilt.
Yes.
She's, you know, but you're right.
The
actual sound of her voice is different. Yes.
But I think you're totally spot on, Evan. I think if anybody else were saying that dialogue, it would not be funny. But because Jennifer Coolidge is so funny, it works. But yeah, I think there is a good movie possibly in here somewhere, because like you could have it be like, I was like kind of hoping for like a Romancing the Stone kind of deal, like that kind of action romance comedy.
But instead, you got the Jewel of the Nile.
Oh yeah, you did.
By the way, I am correct that it's Josh Duhamel's brother, because I remember he says, "Is there any like situation where like brothers marry sisters?" He says that.
Oh
after
God,
he sleeps with Jennifer Lopez.
Oh, yeah, you
sister.
Are right.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So it makes even less sense.
That doesn't job, make movie. Any sense.
Good job.
Thank you. See, I do pay attention to some things. Not the right things all the time, but in this one case. Yeah, this is unfortunately, like I said, you know, the first 30 minutes or so I was on board, and then it just took a shit. I didn't even see... This is also haphazard. I thought it's because all the pirates had masks, I think. But I thought that the pirate who had all the burns on his head, I thought that was like one of the guys who had been grenaded and he had somehow survived the grenade blast. Oh. It didn't occur to me that that was actually the hairspray, you know, on the head guy. Although when she was lighting that cigarette, I was like, I think the hairspray is going to come into play here, because this is the first time her character's mentioned smoking at all.
Yep.
I will say I do like, and again, this might be because I adore Jennifer Lopez so much and I love her kind of her charisma and her spunk, but I really like how she uses the cigarette as a weapon, how she's really excited about the cake knife. Like she's like, ew, why did your mother get me this rusty knife that, you know, has been passed down? But then she's like, I love this cake knife. Like I did like those things. I just, I wish I wasn't cringing so much while I was enjoying those parts. But anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I like that she just was so fed up with that stupid dress. She just was going to cut all the pieces off it and make it more functional.
Yeah.
Yeah. The dress looked better too, even though it was all filthy.
Even with the combat boots.
Oh, I loved it with the combat boots.
Yep.
That's the one thing about these movies that always drives me insane, when you've got the two main characters making concessions for the in-laws and parents and things like that. And I'm always just like, just tell them to fuck off.
I know.
Say I'm not wearing this fucking dress. Right? I'm not.
But people, they do. They make concessions.
They do it. And then they're like, they resent, you know, everything.
Yep.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, I'm glad there, I knew there was something else. And I know, Dave, you mentioned it really early on about, and Evan, you did too, about how J-Lo and Josh Duhamel, their relationship problems because they shift halfway through. I think that's another thing too. Like the way this film is, the summary is kind of marketing it is like, we're supposed to expect some kind of like, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, really acerbic, acidic, venomous bickering and fighting. And we don't get that. It's just like, I wanted a bigger wedding. I didn't want a wedding. I'm scared. You're a little girl, which is gross. But like, it's like, it just, it feels like there's no stakes. And not that those are not issues that a couple have to work through, but they just, they don't feel like a big deal. And it just, I would have liked better banter, maybe more serious issues.
Yeah.
I was expecting a lot more from this. Maybe I should have turned my brain off.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that, I don't know if you should expect more or less, but I do remember part of the reason I was so surprised at the beginning that I was enjoying it as much as I was, is because the last J-Lo movie I saw, the one with Owen Wilson, was just kind of like,
Oh, I love that. I love Marry Me. I watched that like three times.
But I loved that one too.
I feel like most of the movies with big stars that you see on streaming services just kind of suck, you know, especially if in this, like The Lost City is terrible. That's the one with Sandra Bullock and is it Channing Tatum?
Yes.
And now, of course, I can't think of any other ones, but I know they're there.
Yeah. Well, wasn't this movie supposed to have Ryan Reynolds in the lead?
It and was, then, yes. Yeah.
He was still one of the producers, but he couldn't do it for whatever reason. I think if we swap out Ryan Reynolds, the movie at least would be more successful because there would be more chemistry and...
Well, he's a better comic actor.
Yeah, he's a better comic actor, so he could work with the material.
Right.
Yeah.
And he probably would have had a lot more chemistry with Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah. But it would have been another one of those Ryan Reynolds haha performances that he's done a million of, you know? So what I'm saying is it's not going to be the movie that he made with Sandra Bullock. What's that one called?
The Proposal.
The Proposal.
I love that one. I do too. Yeah. I also love Definitely Maybe. I love that movie.
Oh, I love that movie too.
It's so good.
You never learn why they got divorced. I guess that's not really what's important, but it's like, you see them together and then their divorce is like, what happened in the middle? And why does Isla Fisher keep showing up so conveniently just to be, you know, brushed aside? Oh, I see where this is going. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Listen, I've loved Ryan Reynolds ever since Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place. Actually, I take that back. I have loved Ryan Reynolds ever since his first acting gig on the Canadian soap opera 15, which aired on Nickelodeon.
See, I didn't even know that. I knew Two Guys and a Girl in a Pizza Place before they shortened it to Two Guys and a Girl.
That's right. I refuse to use the shortened name.
Right. Seasons 2 and 3, all of a sudden it was Two Guys and a Girl. It's like, well, now it just sounds like fucking
it's just
porn.
Weird.
You know?
It sounds like porn. Yeah, I mean, listen, and I know we're talking a lot about Ryan Reynolds, and I agree it would have been better, but I love a J-Lo rom-com. Like, I love all of them. Every single one she's done, I enjoy. I love Hustlers. There's one she did a few years ago that I can never remember the name of, but she's like a woman who's kind of posing as like this rich woman who's like an executive, and I liked that one. I love them all, and so I was really sad that I didn't love this one. But you can't win them all, I guess.
Nope.
Oh, Second Act.
Yes, I love Second Act.
I haven't seen it, but I remember what it's called.
Yes, I love Second Act. I love The Wedding Planner. Made in Manhattan is okay. I enjoy that. Like, listen, I love Selena. Not that that's a rom-com, but I love that too. I love J-Lo. I just love her. Marry Me. Love it, love it, love it. But not this.
Oh, it's all right.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Owen Wilson-ness of it got to me.
Yeah, I can see that. But the more I watched it, the more I was into it. But I will say, the one thing I will say about this movie, now that I've gotten my venom kind of out of the way, I'm like, oh, but wait, I like this. Oh, but wait, I like this. I will say, I did like that night wedding. Like, finally, when we actually get to the wedding, I'm like, oh, this is kind of romantic and this is kind of nice. I kind of liked it. I also liked when they were all singing in the pool, like before they trick the pirates, which sounds like, if you haven't seen this movie, that sounds so weird when it's like, they're all singing in the pool and before they trick the pirates. That must sound absurd.
Of course, they chose that song, which if I ever hear it again.
I like that song.
Oh my God.
I do.
It's just one of those songs I've heard just so many times.
I know, me too.
I don't even know what it's called, like it. By the way. I just, know that I've heard it a million times. I do think that it's also funny that everybody, no matter their age or their, background, knows the words to it.
That was pretty funny.
Okay. Well, I mean, is this movie worth talking about anymore? Help a guy out. Is there anything else we have to get through? I mean, I don't know why Josh Duhamel doesn't just retire. He did more than 100 episodes of Las Vegas, so he's got to have that sweet, sweet, residual money coming in, right? I don't know.
I would think. I don't know. Maybe not. Who knows?
Maybe not. Yeah, maybe dramas, it's not the same as with comedies. I don't know.
Maybe. Or maybe he really is trying to be a good actor. Like maybe he, I don't know. I feel, like I said, I know there's a good actor in there. It's hiding.
Well, but the roles that he ends up in or chooses or are handed to him or however it works. I mean, he's in all the at least four of the Transformer movies. And it's just like, I'm sure that the payday was huge and it was a challenge to act against a tennis ball, but still, I think we can do better. Was he in Bumblebee? That's the good one, right? That's the one that everybody says is good.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't seen it, but I don't know if he's in that.
I haven't seen it either.
Yeah. And he also changes rank, I noticed, with each Transformers movie. And if you've ever known anybody in the military, they do change ranks, but not that quickly.
Well, what I will say, my final thing about this is this has not deterred me from any future J-Lo movies or rom-coms or J-Lo getting married in a rom-com because she gets married in a lot.
Do they actually get to the wedding in this one or are they just singing? Is that supposed to be the reception?
No, they get, at the end when it's like the sun setting and the woman who's the officiant, that she marries them.
Right. You're right. You're right. Yep.
Yeah, and I liked it because I like a wedding. I'm a sap. I like a wedding.
Oh, sure. Yeah, weddings are fine. I mean, I'm glad that I don't really go to any anymore because all my friends are married already. But, I mean, you got to buy a gift and get a hotel room. Okay. So we all know how weddings work. Mm-hmm. Except for your wedding, Evan, which was like right down the road. It was great.
Evan, your wedding was so much fun.
Your wedding was a lot of fun.
Thanks.
I think that's the last one I went to, though.
That's my last wedding, too. Oh, no, wait, no. I might have gone to another one. But anyway, your wedding, Evan, I always tell everyone how fun it was because it's so much fun.
That was fun.
Oh, shucks. Yeah.
Okay, well, wedding talk aside, it sounds like we're all done with whatever that fucking movie was called, Shotgun Wedding. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to see J-Lo like shoot more of the shotgun, but not her sister.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, of all the killings in this, I mean, nobody got, like a shotgun blast to the chest, which, she was holding that gun for so long.
Yes.
And there were pirates right there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't win them all.
I played too many video games. I want more shotgun shots.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, where's Ellie when you need her?
Yes.
So Shotgun Wedding is out now on Prime. Aaron's Guide to Kissing Girls is out in theaters, select theaters today, and will soon be on VOD, which always sounds weird when you say VOD, because it sounds like you're saying VD, but whatever. Which nobody says anymore, because they don't call it that.
I had never thought
anymore.
Of that.
Yeah. Sorry.
But now I will.
I think about all those things. It's like they used to call cars, the standard transmission. It would say STD, like somewhere in the car. And you're like, you can't do that now. I think that's why everybody started calling it a stick, which is also kind of pervy in its own way. Anyway, moving on. I just told you when the movies are out. So there's that. I want to say thank you to our editor, Otto Klammer. Otto, thank you for making us sound great every week.
Thanks, Otto.
Thanks, Otto.
You can find Spoiler Piece Theater anywhere you find podcasts. You can find us at our website. That's spoilerpiece.com. You want to find us on social media. We're Spoiler Piece Theater on Facebook, and we're at Spoiler Piece on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. If you'd like to email us and tell us, actually, guys, fucking Shotgun Wedding was amazing, the email address is spoilerpiece@gmail.com, or you can give us a call
at 862-21-PIECE.
And let us know that, yes, I agree with you. Shotgun Wedding was crap. I can't believe that anybody spent money to put this movie out. If you like the show, that's the voicemail message I want you to leave. If you like the show, please rate and review us by going to ratethispodcast.com/spoilerpiece, or you can rate and rate us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. That really helps us out, helps get the word out about the show. And if you really like the show, please consider joining our Patreon. As I said at the top, this week's Patreon exclusive audio is Bruce Lee in Enter the Dragon. We are all, well, two of the three of us are new to Bruce Lee, and the third one of us is pretty much new too, just has seen one. So it's a lively conversation. It's very fun talking about the early 70s and how action movies work and how you can see so many things from this movie show up in other movies that it influenced. It's a great conversation. We hope you like it. And we wanted to, again, thank our sponsor piece patron, Heather Sachs. My name is Dave Riedel. I write for the Chicago Reader. I yap about movies. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd as Dave Sees Movies. And I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association. That's so much stuff to get out now. God.
My name is Evan Crean. I'm co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd as Real Recon, and that's real as in film reel.
And my name is Megan Kearns. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network. I too am a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, and I'm a member of Gallica. You can follow me on Twitter at OpinionSWorld or on Instagram and Letterboxd at TheOpinionS.
See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.